As for me, I think your Magic Horn and your High King Peter and your Lion Aslan are all eggs and moonshine.
So it is a lot of fun because he is that kind of quirky character.
That was John Allen Harrit, one of the actors in the stage adaptation of C.S. Lewis's Prince Caspian. It's a fantasy story taking you into the magical world of Narnia, where four children help Prince Caspian take the throne. I traveled to the Museum of the Bible to have a conversation with some of the cast and crew, including Noah and Nicole Stratton, the husband and wife team who helped to bring this story to stage. They're going to begin our Studio 5 conversation.
So we're here to talk about the second production here at the Museum of the Bible.
Yes.
To begin that, this is a bit of a family affair. You guys are husband and wife,
That's
and
right.
I know your son's in the production. How does this all work?
Yeah, so it really began with my wife's parents. They were the ones that started the ministry back in 1971. So the Academy of Arts, our ministry, and then from that it's grown in multiple levels of multifacets of what we have now, of a college and conservatory, a film program, a number of different things. So we're very grateful for that. But yeah, so Nicole is the third of the four daughters. There were four daughters involved, and now I was able to marry into it, which was great. I love the ministry. I love what God was doing with it, and it was just a blessing to come along and now carry on the great and build on the great foundation that her parents started the ministry with.
I think that's the philosophy that even growing up, we knew that we were included in the ministry. It wasn't mom and dad's ministry and we were over here. Mm-hmm. We were a part of it and always included in some way, shape or form behind the scenes, on the stage, and always taught from the beginning that our gifts were given to us by the Lord to be used for Him, and then giving us ways to do that. So, and when we go on the road, we do cut the cast down from what we normally have in Taylor's, because we're touring and the expense of it. So anyone that comes, of course, we're going to bring our son with us when we come. So anyone that comes has to work hard and be backstage and on stage in some way, shape, or form. So we've told him if the Lord leads him in another direction as he gets older, that's fine. But now this is what our family does for the Lord together. So it's been a joy to do it. In fact, when we did the world premiere of this show, Brenton was six, and he played the little Caspian. And I'm the nurse of Caspian, so I got to interact with my son in that way. And how sweet memories.
Nice.
So really, really precious.
Yeah.
Has C.S. Lewis always been at the heart of the production you guys do, productions you do, or no?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, that was actually something that came into our ministry later on. My parents and your parents, I mean, we all knew the books, loved the books, had them read to us, read them when we were young. But it actually entered our ministry for a very strategic reason. Mm-hmm. And kind of like in Horse Nose Boy, when you're having that a struggle and you look back on it and say, that was Aslan actually moving you along, that was the Lord. And that's where we were. We were at a point in our ministry where we did not have the funds for marketing that we would have liked, and we wanted to spread the word about what was going on with our ministry. But, you know, to convince people to come see Paul the Apostle or God Meant It for Good, which is our story on Joseph, where they don't know that as well, it was, you know, becoming a struggle. So we all were praying as a collective artistic team, God, what do you want us to do for this? Mm-hmm. And someone brought up doing the Narnia series, and I said, oh, no. Don't want to do that, because we didn't want to ruin the books or do them a disservice. Mm-hmm. But then the Lord, again, put us in a position where that was the best decision, because they were according to our mission, but they also were well known, where I wouldn't have to explain to people Prince Caspian or Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe or The Horse and His Boy. People know of it. So we prayerfully decided, if we can do Aslan well and do him respectfully, then we will try our hand at it as a ministry with Narnia. And that's how he did it, was really out of necessity. Mm-hmm. So we didn't come into this saying, we're going to be the Narnia people, and we're going to, it had nothing to do with that. But Lord, how do we get the word out about your ministry? And he guided us to Narnia.
Yeah.
And here we sit today at the Museum of the Bible talking about the production of Prince Caspian. For those not familiar with the story, what can you tell us about what we will see on stage?
Yeah, so this is kind of the, people love to debate the order of the books, but the second or third, if you will, in the seven book series. So this is the four Pevensey children, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, and they've had their great adventures in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But now they've come back to England. They're back to being children again. Nicole always has very creative ways of starting out the play. So if you come see the play, there's actually some history that she gives really quickly to start out the play that's really exciting, gripping, wonderful. But then it comes to the four Pevensies, and they're there, and they get sucked back out of the train station. They're about to go off to school, get sucked back into Narnia, and have a great adventure of helping Prince Caspian get back on the throne, where he's rightfully is the next leader, and I play the evil character, why I'm dressed like this. We just got done with the show, so I don't normally walk around like this. So I play the evil uncle, Miraz, who's trying to get rid of Caspian and keep control himself. So it's that great struggle before coming back and helping Caspian get back on the throne.
And Nicole, you play?
I play Caspian's nurse. Mm-hmm. So in the book, if they're familiar with the book, I'm one sentence. In the show, I did expand the role of the nurse simply because of just reading and understanding Lewis's love of his mother and the loss of his mother as a young boy. He weaves that through his stories very often, where there's a female character who really invests in the child and then is taken away or potentially taken away. And I wanted the audiences to really connect with Caspian. So we actually start with a young Caspian, and she's very nurturing. She's that one giving him the love of the old things. And then she's taken away from him. And so you feel this loss for Caspian. And hopefully by the time he's riding his horse, a literal puppet that we have, that he's riding away from the castle, you're rooting for Caspian because of the emotional connection we've made through my character and Caspian. So,
And this is your second production in terms of you writing.
In fact, what's interesting about the Narnia books is we did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. We did the European script in Scotland. We were asked to represent the United States in Edinburgh's Fringe Festival. And so to do that, I didn't want to get ignored. So it's a lot of people at one place. You can get lost in the crowd. So we decided to ship our lion over to Scotland, and we did The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe over there. That went so well. Everybody kind of looked at us and said, what's next? And I said, well, the next book is Caspian, so let's try that. And that was my first script to have to write, because I looked around for a script and realized there was none. And then when I contacted the C.S. Lewis company, they said, no, there's no stage adaptation yet, but this would be a world premiere. And I said, well, could I vet it with you? And they said, yes, which is what had me meet Douglas Gresham, who is the stepson of C.S. Lewis, and I got to vet my script through him, which I look back on that now, and I knew it was such an honor, but I didn't know how profound that would be for our ministry, because he not only vetted the script, he became a friend, and then he flew over twice to see our shows and to promote it and to put his stamp of approval on the show, which now I look at that and say, my goodness, what an absolute honor. We were honored to have him, but I didn't realize that would be a very instrumental thing for our ministry's growth, and just the friendship has been amazing.
So she's had to adapt to Prince Caspian and the horse and his boy.
We're working on the third, so.
Yeah, and to come. And that was really very exciting with Douglas Gresham, because he remembers C.S. Lewis coming down the stairs with the original manuscript and putting that there in front of Douglas and his brother and saying, this is dedicated to you. So when he came over and saw that one, we were even more on edge of like, this is it's very special.
Better get
we
it
need
right.
to do this right, right. But Nicole's very much a purist, and he gave her a wonderful compliment, several, but one was, he said, if you'd have had her script of Prince Caspian years ago, he would have wanted to use that for the film, the big Walden Media film that was done. So he absolutely loves her adaptations and how they are purist. They stick so closely to the book, and we're very grateful for the connections.
What's the most exciting part about bringing this production here to the Museum of the Bible?
Just, I am so grateful for the partnership that's been forming. The fact that it's not just they wanted one production and it would be done. They really want a partnership with the Logos Theater, and for us to begin to bring state-of-the-art professional productions that are God-honoring and produced by believers. And I love that. I also love the fact of how it's grown our faith, because I truly did not believe Caspian could tour at first. I told them no several times. But, you know, they were willing to help us financially to be able to rebuild our entire set. We redesigned and rebuilt it from the ground up. And so now that makes it almost like we've cut that cord, and now it's free for the country and for the world, really, if we could take it places. So that was exciting to know that they've kind of been a visionary in bringing these Narnia shows here, but also making them possible to go around the country, should that be something the Lord wants to happen.
Mm-hmm. And it really is a vision realized as well. I think that's a special part of it, is her dad, our founder, you know, he said 5 years ago, we're going to be working with Museum of the Bible, and was just so clear about it. He was, and almost to the point that we at times would be like, Dad, like, we don't even really know them. Like, we've reached out, but haven't really been able to make a connection yet. And we don't want to overstep or oversay something that's not there yet. But he was such a man of faith, such a man of vision. Mm-hmm. And so shortly after his passing, you know, it was just a few months later that we were finalizing the first time to come here. And just, it was truly, truly amazing. So I think that's especially wonderful thing for us to be here, is that aspect of it as well.
In terms of setting the stage and moving Prince Caspian from home to here, what were some of the obstacles? What were some of the things that were concerning you?
To the very end, the water god scene was concerning me. You have to explode the bridge of Baruna, and this water god has to come through and just make this bridge explode. And that's how the battle is actually won. Aslan wins the battle. And that's a very important part of the show for that reason. And so redesigning it, we had to do it really in theory, because our theater is not the same as theirs, and our flight rigging is not the same as theirs. So until we got onto the actual stage here and began to practice that scene, we did not know our theory would actually work. And but that is such a beautiful scene that turned out, I think, just magnificently. Yeah. But that, and then there are trees, giant trees that come to life in this show, and they fight in the battle. They actually are sent by Aslan, awoken and sent by Aslan. So the stilt work that the guys are doing, the amount of scenery that this show demands, whereas Horse Nose Boy was, we were able to really bring that down even more with the scenery. But with Caspian, you can't. There are definitely giant boulders that they've got to be on, and there's certain things you just can't take away or put on a digital screen. You've got to actually have it there. And so those were several elements, disappearing our telemarines and disappearing our pevensies. They have to go through these sticks and disappear into Narnia. So there's definitely tricks in Narnia that you say, how is that ever going to happen on somebody else's stage? But that was a great team effort, where all the team works together. And of course, you've got computers that we've been generating things, 3D printing items, working on behind the scenes to make it happen. And now it is here. Yeah. We are very excited and relieved.
What's the deeper message of this story?
Oh man. I sum it up in the one word of sanctification. Language of the Wardrobe is very much justification, Aslan taking that place of Edmund, dying in his place. That to us is very much that walk of Lucy's the only one that sees Aslan at first of the four children, and she's so certain of it, and the other three are confused, why can't we see him, and really walking by faith. And I think that's so much of our Christian life, is we are flesh and blood. We can only see the physical around us, but yet being able to look at the principles of Scripture, look at what God tells us to do, and move forward many times when it doesn't always make sense, and being willing to trust Him in the hardships. There's a lot of battles in this. There's a lot of fighting and struggle, and that's what our life can be a lot. It's just a lot of battles and fighting and struggle, but yet Aslan, Christ, is working behind the scenes, and I love that in this story. You see it at the end, oh, he was doing that, oh, he was working there, oh, he was helping here, and we just didn't see it. And that message is so powerful. I had someone tell me the other day, they said, if anyone has any sensibilities, they will walk out of here overwhelmed with this message. And so that's what we love, because we don't do a show just to do a bright, glamorous show. There's nothing in that for us. It really is the message that's getting out and ministering to hearts.
Aslan's line when he says to Lucy, he sends her back to her siblings and tells her to awake them again and tell them that he is there and that they must follow. And she finally goes back and she says, yes, Aslan. And he says, but if they will not, you, my child, must follow me alone. And to even stand when it's family or close friends or people that you love that aren't following, for you to choose to follow, whether anyone does or not, And to give that message, not only to our audiences, but for me as the director, to give that to my cast and to those young children. And there's a moment where Lucy looks at all of her siblings and they're not listening to her. And she said, I had hoped that you would all come with me, but I must follow him, whether any of you do or not. Mm. And she turns and begins to walk. And I say to myself, even through this, I must have the faith to do that, because even in my following, for other people who may not be able to see or hear him, as they watch me follow, it will give them the courage to begin to take those next steps, and eventually they will see and they will hear. And so we want to really also, we're praying that the Spirit of God will breathe on America and wake them up. Yep. Wake them up with his Spirit and remind them that he's coming back soon and that we've got to be ready and we've got to be about his business. So, and when Aslan wakes up those trees, he breathes on them and wakes them up and sends them out into the battle. We all are very excited backstage, and it just re-energizes us to know why we're getting up every single day, why we're doing 56 shows in 2 months. We're doing this for a bigger cause than just performing, like Noah said.
Yeah. Why do the puppets work? These massive puppets on stage. Why does that work?
That is a good question.
It's an interesting way of asking that. It's very good. Yeah. It's very good. I think people's, it's the wonder sum of Lewis and his imagination. And I think as you come to see a stage production, and even if films, of course, there is that, if a story is written well, you step into it. That's the why you find yourself crying, why you find yourself laughing, because you've been drawn into the story in some ways. And so I think when those puppets come out on the stage and giant theatrical, beautiful puppets come out on stage, I think people have been drawn into the story. And so that is just another step for them of saying, that is a horse up there, that is a bear, that is a tree. And I think that's part of it, why it works.
Yeah, and it's the power of theater. I don't think I will ever want to be involved in theater where everything is given to you just as a film would do, because theater is supposed to engage the audience's imagination. They're supposed to come on a journey with us. So not everything should be given to you, though our puppets are very realistic. There's that element of imagination that the audience is using. And to me, that is the beauty of this, because I don't want to just entertain people and have them turn their minds off. I want to ignite their minds, and that imagination does that. And I think Lewis, that's one of the beautiful things he does in his books with young people. Yeah. He's asking you to come on this journey, like Noah said, and igniting that imagination and letting it feed the wonder of it all. So, and when the people get in the puppets, they bring a life to it and a personality to it that is very real. I mean, you act off these puppets, you can start getting a little bit scared or inspired. Yes. So it's an amazing thing. When the puppeteers, so the wild bear actually is shot eventually and dies, stabbed by Peter, and the puppeteers exit the puppet and look at the puppet and then turn and walk off the stage. And there's no puppeteers in that puppet anymore. And that puppet looks dead. And you realize there's no more life in that puppet. And so, yeah, that I think the mixture of the audience's imagination and then our puppeteers doing such a fantastic job.
Yeah, they do. They're the stars of the show, and you probably will never see them, but they're the stars.
Yeah, they really are.
If you ever get an opportunity, which I imagine you do from time to time, to just look at the faces of the audience as this thing is unfolding. Describe what that's like for you. What do you see?
I saw a young man the other day in the battle when the bad guys were being destroyed. He lifted up his sword in the middle of the show and said, yes! And they were responding. In the scene when Aslan is there and the other three Pevensies can't see him, a little boy down front said, but he's just right there. And that faith where he felt so involved in the story that he said, but he's right there, can't you see him? We all just were, I don't know, it was, I've seen people raising their hand to worship, I've seen them crying. So that ignites our hearts and encourages us, it blesses us, because that's the Lord and his Spirit working in the audience. So I am glad that the Museum of the Bible is so intimate because they're right there. I mean, when we first started performing here, we had to get used to that because you walk on the stage and you want to kind of look down at them. They're
right there,
very much right there. So that intimacy is so special, and you do feel the energy of the audience. So that's, as a performer, it really does help.
Yeah.
And the last question for you, this production has a song, and this is the first for you guys?
It is.
Tell me about it.
So someone gave us the idea. They said, you know, coming to see your shows, I would love some kind of theme song to this show that I could take away with me. And I got to thinking about that. I talked to Olivia Singleton, who is our music director now. My father was our music director, and he wrote all the music for our ministry for years. And he trained this young lady for 6 years. So after he passed, she took over. I came to Olivia. I said, could we write a song that was Narnia themed that could be a real inspiration? And she actually took the melodies that's in Caspian. There's a lullaby that the nurse sings to young Caspian. She took that melody and built the song off of that melody. And it's from Aslan to us. Courage, dear heart, the dawn is still before you. And it is an unbelievably inspiring song. It's really also for a celebration, because this is 10 years that the Logos Theater has been bringing Narnia to life on the stage. This is our 10th anniversary. So in honor of that, we wanted to kind of put that out there. And so it's now up on streaming sites. So it's Look for the Morning is the title of the song. And it's just a reminder from Aslan to us that he is coming back. Hold on, I'm coming again. And it's been a blessing, and we hope it's a blessing to people as they listen to it.
You guys are a blessing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Thank you very much. You are the best. We wish we could take you everywhere. Seriously. I want you to do a master's class with all of my students on how to interview someone.
Seriously, yeah.
Thank you.
I love that conversation with Noah and Nicole Stratton. Right now, we're going to continue more of our conversations with the cast of C.S. Lewis's Prince Caspian. Now I'm going to sit down with puppet master Justin Swain. He's responsible for the captivating visuals of puppets on the stage that bring this story to actually larger-than-life status.
So, you're the puppet master, correct?
That's me, the puppet master, yep. Master of manipulation, just inanimate objects, not people.
And yeah. You do some incredible work. How many are we seeing on stage from you in Prince Caspian?
There are seven, but gray area of what would you define as a puppet, right? Because we have two of our three trees are on stilts, and they're all walking around with all kinds of tree ornamentation. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, oh, that's just a costume, or it's a suit, it's not a puppet. Mm. We call them puppets. So total, we'll say that there's seven.
Seven. Yeah. What's special to you about this particular production?
Prince Caspian as a whole, or in the vein of puppetry in Prince Caspian?
Both.
All right. Well, for the puppetry side of it, this is very special because every time that we revisit one of our productions at the Logos Theater, we always seek to do better and to strive for more. So that bringing it back brings us a new opportunity to do more and do better. So we've introduced two new characters to this show. Both of them are full-size bear puppets. One is friendly, one not so friendly. But just to see those come to fruition, that's really exciting as far as the puppet element of bringing Caspian. But just the overall show, speaking to a deeper level, I'm most excited about it because C.S. Lewis was just a brilliant, brilliant man and a man of God. And that comes through with so much of his works. But I just love the Chronicles of Narnia because of the fantasy with the truth tied into it. Mm-hmm. And that is just so powerfully brought out in the story of Prince Caspian. There's a lot of different arcs that different characters go through with so much depth and meaning to them. If you're willing to dig, you'll really find that there's a lot there. And this story, it just has a lot to bring to so many different people and groups that I'm excited to be bringing it alive every night.
What theme touches you the most?
And that can really change on a show-by-show basis. We just finished one production, and I'd say the thing that really got me the most today, I have the privilege of operating the head of Aslan, and of course that represents Jesus Christ, so getting into character is really fun. You just sit down and meditate and pray to the Lord and get in the Word. But the thing that was really hitting me today is there's a line that Aslan has with Peter, and it's when Peter has not been seeing Aslan, his faith has been wavering, and then finally he sees, and he's immediately humbled, and he falls down to his knees in front of Aslan. He says, oh, Aslan, I'm so glad, and I'm so sorry. I've been leading them wrong from the beginning. And that just hit me. I'm stepping in the role of my father. I've got a lot of people under me in my department where I'm in a position of leadership. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me in such a way of like, God, please, may I not ever find myself in a position where I feel like I've been leading people just in the wrong way. because he's leading, right? You could say, oh, Peter, you're not being a leader at all. No, he was leading, and he acknowledged that. Mm-hmm. But I've been leading them wrong since the beginning. And it really struck me today of, God, please, for myself and then the people that are watching this show today, may we not be leaders leading people in the wrong direction. May we lead people to the truth of Christ.
Nice. What is it like being able to play Aslan?
I mean, play Aslan. I'm one of three on the team for mm-hmm. operating the puppet. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, we have an incredible voice by the founder of our ministry, Dr. Chavers. He did the recordings for all of Aslan. So those lines are from him every wow. night. So it's really the four of us, along with the young lady in the booth that's actually hitting the cues. We all kind of work together to bring the character in. But it's just a privilege to be a part of that team of bringing this character to life, because every decision that we make on stage has the potential to change somebody's eternal destiny. And that's just, it's a weight, but it's also a joy to think, I can do all this for my own glory. Look at how good I am at moving this puppet. Or I can really serve right now, serve this story, serve this message, serve this character, and serve this audience so that people's lives can be changed. And that's an incredible privilege.
What happened to your life to bring you to this ministry and what you're doing now?
Man, how much time do we have, sir? It's a long story, but to put it in a nutshell, I was on a very wrong trajectory of rejecting God. I was taught a lot of Christ, truth, salvation, all these different things, and I was really turning my back on a lot of it, and I'd gotten in a lot of trouble as a young man with substance abuse, immoral relationships, drinking, drugs, partying. I wouldn't say I was an atheist, but I was living the life of a deist more, where I think evolution's foolish. There's a God, but what does he care about this earth? What does he care about us? What does he care about me? Mm-hmm. He doesn't even know who I am. Mm-hmm. He just set things in motion and just left it be. And I'd gotten involved in the ministry indirectly from being in school and the participations that the ministry had with our school and drama programs. And in that, for maybe 30 minutes, the director, Nicole Stratton, I believe y'all just met with her, she got to work with my school when I was on stage for a few minutes, and you know, 50 kids, and she's busy, and 30 minutes of just encouraging us and challenging us because we were performing the next day, and that was it. Well, fast forward a year, and I'm at a pivotal moment where God smacked me upside the head, much like Paul on the road to Damascus, and I really got exposed to the lifestyle I was living. Everybody saw, the curtain was drawn back, and here's who Justin really is. Oh, wow, he's not this good Christian kid. And my life was just kind of up in the air. Mm-hmm. And part of that story was I felt like God was trying to get my attention, so I said, fine, I'll go to church. Went to a church service that Nicole Stratton didn't even attend, and yet she was at this church service that night, randomly, and I'm walking out randomly, having just been expelled from school, and she sees me and goes, hey, aren't you Justin Swain? Like, yes, I am Justin Swain. It's pretty cool. I mean, obviously, I made an impression a year ago that you'd remember me from 30 minutes amongst my peers that I stuck out to you. Pride and vanity. But she said, hey, I would like for you to come and audition for a show that we're doing. I heard that you're no longer at your school, but you're homeschooled. We do the same camps we did with you guys, but for homeschoolers. Why don't you come audition tomorrow night? I was like, sure, I've got nothing else going on. Just got kicked out of school. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And I'm in this weird in-between phase of what do I do? So I felt like that was the God of the universe seeing me and saying, I do see you. I do know you. Go, give it a try. Let's see what goes down that road. Mm-hmm. So I went and auditioned, and I wound up getting cast in the part of a Civil War retelling of the Prodigal Son. And I was cast as the Prodigal Son role. Wow. So obviously getting in character and getting poured into like that just changes you in many ways. But that was the start of my involvement in the ministry some 11 years ago, and the rest has been history.
11 years in.
Yeah, and this is I didn't really jump into it, but 11 is a very significant number to me. Mm-hmm. Before all this had happened, just growing up, random places, 11. So it was actually November 11th, 2011, which is 11-11-11. Mm-hmm. Me and a lot of my friends were going to have a huge party and just celebrate Swain Day and all this. And that was the day where everything, the curtain was drawn, and I got exposed and expelled from my school and all. And I was sitting there in my bed at night and just thinking, man, this was supposed to be the biggest day of my life. And that's like when the Holy Spirit, still small voice, just stung me in the heart and said, Justin, this still can be the biggest day of your life. Mm. So give your life to me. That's kind of, I left that detail out, but yeah, wow. It's 11, and now 11 years later, here I am, so.
Amazing.
There's no such thing as coincidence.
Considering that life experience and where you are, what's your prayer nightly when this production hits the stage? What are you asking God to do?
Well, I mean, I know from the promise in His Word that it'll never return void. Mm-hmm. and you could say, you know, Narnia isn't the Bible, it's not the Bible, but the allegory and the truths are so principally woven all throughout that, I mean, all truth is God's truth, and it's all based on His truth. So as we're giving out a message each night, my prayer is just, I'm claiming in faith that what we are sharing would return, that the seeds that we're sowing, we might not know this side of eternity, the ramifications of those decisions, but as long as in my heart I am giving my best, my five loaves and my two fish unto my Lord, and doing what I can and doing my part and being obedient to Him, then I know I can claim that it's not going to be returning void. And who knows, when we stand before our Maker, I'm going to see all kinds of lives that are a more or less a ripple, not a direct impact maybe, but just another thread in the tapestry that He's been weaving, but that I've been a part in their trajectory. That's the prayer that each night, that God, what we are doing now would change somebody's life.
Weird question for you. Of all the puppets you've created, what's your favorite?
It's a fun question. I always like to say the next one.
I love it.
Because, I mean, every time, inevitably, I make something, or the team, we all work together and we've got something. Immediately, even before we're finished, I'm already seeing, I wish I could go back and do that different, or I wish I could change that. So whatever the next one is an opportunity for me to take what I've learned and improve on it. So jokingly, I will always answer, the next one's my favorite, the next one.
Do we know always, what the next one is?
I don't think I can talk about that yet. I don't think okay. I can. But it'll be good. It'll be good.
Good.
Beyond that, though, currently, favorite puppet, I mean, how could you get away from Aslan? He's probably the most difficult to operate practically. And then also, I think a lot of that ties into, you know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. So how much more so is it difficult to be, you know, portraying this character that we truly believe and are acting in accordance as representing Jesus Christ? That's going to come with its own set of difficulties beyond just, here's a bear that makes people laugh, you know. But the struggle and the challenge of bringing that character to life is always going to bring fruit with it as well. So I would say Aslan has to be the best.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you. And our Studio 5 conversation continues now with actor John Allen Harrod. He plays the hilarious role of Trumpkin the Dwarf, a role he actually began playing back in 2017.
So, John, in Prince Caspian, you are?
Trumpkin.
Trumpkin.
Trumpkin the Dwarf.
The Dwarf.
Yes.
Tell me about
it. Well, Trumpkin is the Red Dwarf, and he is... Well, they call him the DLF in the book,
okay.
Which stands for Dear Little Friend. It's a nickname given to him by Edmund. And I personally resonated with Trumpkin because Trumpkin doesn't believe in magic lions in the beginning part of everything. And in my own story, I have come to see God for who He is, and really if had an enjoyable time of bringing this character to life because of the conversion experience that Trumpkin has in the play. So it's been very exciting. So I'm honored to be back. I'm reprising the role. I was called in 2017 to be part of the cast. And I live in Los Angeles now, so coming back and forth was kind of a jump, and I stay pretty busy out there, as you can imagine. So. Being here for the 2 months was quite an undertaking, but I'm glad I did. I'm very glad I did.
What do you like about your character? What is it that strikes you?
Well, Trumpkin is, of course, by some accounts, the comic relief. So
I hear he's pretty funny.
A merry heart doeth good like a medicine.
Yes, indeed.
And there are some deep... meaningful, impactful moments in Caspian, and it's very intense in some places. So to bring in the levity at the end of a scene and kind of lighten things up, and the audience needs that. You need a release. You need to be able to go breathe, right? And so there are several moments, and by God's grace, I've been given some comedic timing and knowing how to let those lines lie or to lay is important. So I'm thankful for the opportunity, and it's a lot of fun.
I have to ask, can you give us a few of the lines? Can we hear what they sound
like? Oh, well, whistles and whirligigs, Truffle Hunter. You don't actually believe in all those stories, do you?
He has these little phrases, he says, you know,
thimbles and thunderstorms.
He likes to say,
tubs and tortoise shells.
One of his lines is,
As for me, I think your magic horn and your high King Peter and your lion Aslan are all eggs and moonshine.
So it is a lot of fun because he is that kind of quirky character, and I think Lewis connects fantasy for the audience in a really wonderful way, because we believe as Christians in what many people would call fantasy. We believe in magic, and we believe in immortality. So there are some wonderful connections that, for an audience, I believe God can connect these points to the audience, and it's really special to be part of that. Like, I'm playing a fantastical character, but I, as an actor, am connecting to a deeper level that I, at one point, didn't believe in magic lions, and now I do. And so to be able to bring those points to reality for the audience and let God do what God's going to do is also very special.
The ability to tell this story in your character, how much of it is pulled from personal experience of coming to Christ?
Oh, wow. A good amount. I was the son of a preacher, and as the enemy will do, he sought to destroy the heritage of faith and attack my dad's ministry by attacking his children. Now, in my adult life, I realized that it is the case in many homes that if the enemy can't get to the preacher, he attacks the children and the family. And so I ran from God for 10 years and ran down that road and got everything I thought I needed to be happy. I had a dinner theater and restaurant in Florida and everything that I thought I wanted. And like that old Rolling Stones song, Can't Get No Satisfaction, I came to the end of myself. And July 7th of 2007, I surrendered to the authority of Scripture and an understanding that God has a perfect will. And what shall it profit a man if he gain the world and lose his soul? So I'm thankful for that heritage of faith, because those seeds that were sown in me by God-fearing parents, I believe the Holy Spirit came back later to connect those dots for me of like, there's a way that seemeth right to man, but the end thereof is destruction. And Jesus said, whosoever will follow me must first deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. And for me, I knew that what that looked like and what I needed to do. So it's been an incredible journey. In 2015, I went to be part of a church plant in Los Angeles. And now I'm an art director in the film and television industry and sing with the gospel quartet and try to tell God how your life is going to end up. But it's an incredible journey, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
What's it like to be a part of this production and shows with puppetry and just out of this world stage production?
It's really special, because I actually was with the Academy almost 20 something years ago. Nicole and I were in school together. And come full circle, I've seen the Academy grow. The Academy spent much of their resources invested in people. And as opposed to bringing the audience to them, their ministry has taken it out across the country into schools and into churches. And a lot of that work and the fruit of it, we won't know till eternity, right? Now I'm looking at puppets and flying trees and all of what I see as the faithfulness of God. And then you have these really amazing adults that are impacting the next generation, because that is what it is about ultimately. One generation conveying to the next the goodness of God. I was talking to Justin a little bit ago. That's the special thing about this ministry, is these adults taking the time to connect for these kids, multi-generation. And for me, that's the reason I'm here, is if just one child can make that connection, then it's all worth it. Yeah.
If you get to glimpse out in the audience while you're on stage, give me a snapshot. What do you see on those young faces?
Oh, wow. Well, C.S. Lewis wrote a book called Surprised by Joy. and to see the wonder and the amazement at all of the moving parts and the people and the characters and the colors and the vibrance of it reminds the audience that there is more. And that's what we're hoping for. I personally, as a comedic actor, love to hear the laughter. I don't always get to see. I try not to look directly into someone's eyes unless I'm personally breaking the fourth wall. But there is that connection. I do get to see that in just wide-eyed amazement. For a lot of people, they grew up reading these books. So to have an audience see this come to life in a very real way, each character, you know, with its own actor bringing their take on that character. I was humbled to receive a compliment by a gentleman who came backstage and said he's always read Trumpkin and he was happy to see Trumpkin played the way he imagined it. And that was a very special, heartwarming moment for me. And all glory to God. Mm-hmm. That's very special.
Nice. If you could go back in time and see John as a little boy, in light of where you're sitting today, what would you tell him?
Oh, wow. I pray that he sees the lion for who he is. And if he can grab a hold of that truth early on, it'll make the world a difference.
Amen. Amen. Thank you.
Praise God.
The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, is playing at the World Stage Theater at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. It runs through April 27th. I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of Conversations from Studio 5. We appreciate you making this your weekly destination for uplifting interviews in the world of lifestyle and entertainment with a strong focus on faith. I hope you'll come back and join us next week. Next week, we're going to talk with some of the cast and crew of the film starring Anthony Hopkins. For more information on the show, please be sure to check out our Facebook page. You can find us on Instagram as well by searching Studio 5. We'll see you next week right here on the podcast.